question is on Hosea 8:4, which reads like this. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, and I knew it not. Of their silver and their gold have they made them idols, that they may be cut off. You utilize Hosea 13 about him giving them a king and his anger taking away in his wrath. Those passages you shared about, you know, the anticipation of the king, that's really appreciate that. But when he says they have set up kings, now this would be in reference to Israel one day. They have made princes, and I knew it not. So he was basically saying to Israel, they made kings that he did not ordain or appoint. Would it be, and I'm going to hold you to it either way, but would it be an overgeneralization possibly to point out the fact here, if Israel made kings and princes of whom God knew not, certainly in the kingdoms of the world, could not man make kingdoms whom God knew not?
Probably so. Good observation.
And there in relationship to Romans 13 then, we're not necessarily specific speaking about a specific kingdom, but the concept of government. And there are occasions in the relationship in the Old Testament between Israel and other kingdoms in carrying out the providential hand where that role is noticed. But you could not assume that in every government and nation.
Yeah, that's right. And besides all of that, they were called ministers of God, and that's in the governmental realm. And just like a minister of God in the religious realm can be unfaithful, so can they.
You mentioned about Saul being a king of the people and David, the king of the Lord. Isn't that amazing when you come down at the end? Here's David inquiring of the Lord, and poor old Saul, every time he rings the Lord, he gets a busy singer. And then had to turn and go to those, that he himself in a fitful zeal would take down. But that inquiry versus
I had a question about 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 11. It says, when all those who had formerly known him saw him prophesying with the prophets, they asked each other, what is this that has happened to the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets? And I was just wanting you to clarify what you had said. Are you meaning that they were not they were not familiar in seeing Paul in the company of prophets, or that his character might not have been as good as it could have been? And I was wanting to know if that had what that had to do with verse 24, where Saul says, you see the man the Lord has chosen, there is no one like him among all the people. If what he was saying, like, there is no one like him among all the people, if that was just in appearance, or if that was in his character as well.
That was in his vertical virtues, they call it. His handsomeness had nothing to do with his character. No, I don't think so. And I think that because it says that became a proverb unto Israel, that it indicates that you have to remember the school of prophets was real close to Saul's home, and yet he didn't know them, and the people had never seen him among them before. And Samuel, that was one of the places where Samuel had come on his circuit. And yet Saul didn't know him, couldn't recognize him. And so he just was not associated with those prophets in any way before this time. That's the reason it became a proverb.
Reads, but the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and the evil spirit of the Lord troubled him, and Saul's servant said unto him, Behold, now an evil spirit from God troubles thee.
I don't know what that evil spirit is, but when God took his spirit away from him, that meant that Saul could not consult God. And so far as the battles he was about to engage in, or whether he should or should not, he wasn't answering for those stones. And Samuel wasn't coming to see him. He had no help at all. And so I don't know the evil spirit. I wouldn't think it was a demon, you know, a demon. But I think Saul may have just returned to his own spirit, because he was raised up in the country where every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And that's the kind of spirit he had started manifesting there in 1 Samuel 15.
Riley?
Story about 1 Samuel 15:11, and when the Lord speaks to Samuel, tells him what Saul's done, and then says Saul cried out to the Lord all night. Is it fair to say, take it to our time as far as an example to pray for our brethren who see them fail, or our leaders fail? I'm sure we need to still talk about them. Is it fair to pray for them prior to the point making confession, that they will make a confession?
Sure. In fact, I think one of the great lessons that we are taught here in this series of chapters is that when we have a leader in God's people that goes bad, we still have to have respect for that man. We ought to spend more time crying for them than we do talking about them. It's happened so much today. And I think the church would be much stronger if that would happen. How many have seen a leader gone bad and have cried and have prayed? And, you know, finally the warning of Samuel became so great that God said, how long are you going to mourn? Church leader goes bad, that ought to be a crisis instead of something to talk about.
Bill Davis?
Benny, would you care to comment on the why, and maybe you did, I might have missed it, why Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin, when it had been prophesied back in Genesis 49:10 that he would come from the tribe of Judah? Was that an illegitimate kingdom there, or was it just a...
Well, it wasn't a kingdom that was pleasing to Saul and to God, although they tolerated. God granted a lot of things because of the hardness of their hearts. Now, from the time that prophecy was made in Genesis 49:10, please. Well, it was 600 years until David was anointed king. And after that, the scepter did not depart from Judah. Now, you know, other men tried to prematurely answer God's plans. That was God's plan. I think Abraham and Sarah tried to bring about the heir prematurely. And that didn't work out. And I think that's one of the reasons why Samuel and God became so angry, because God wasn't ready to set up a king at this time. And yet the people demanded it, and because of the hardness of their heart, he granted it to them. And that prophecy began to be fulfilled, though, in David.
In 1 Samuel chapter 28, Saul pays a visit to the witch of Endor. I guess he got tired of getting a busy signal and tried a different phone number. And in your study of Saul, in your study of this particular episode, would you explain what you believe really happened there? If this was Samuel returned from the dead, or as I guess some cults believe, that this was a demon that said these things. Do you have anything that you could add on this particular story?
Well, Saul had, you know, had been real strong against the witches and the people who engaged in such things. And yet here was this woman in Endor, which just happened to be nearby where Saul and his army was. And she was, you know, used to situations like this and deceiving people. But when she saw Samuel, she knew it wasn't what she had ordinarily done. This was something special. And I believe it was really Samuel, and I believe that God brought Samuel back up, Samuel got after Saul about, you know, why have you disquieted me, or why have you disturbed my peace? And then he really gave a blistering little sermonette to Samuel and told him that tomorrow you and your sons are going to be with me, speaking about in death. And the next day Saul and his three sons were killed.
Do you understand that the spirit that was called up, that in some way it may have changed to a bodily form that he could see, because it mentions that she said she saw an old man wearing a robe as coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think God prepared it so that she would see it. Like angels came into different forms so that they could be seen. And they're certainly a part of the invisible world. And God just brought Samuel back up in a manner that she could see.
Okay. Glenn?
I wanted to follow up on that just a bit. Do you believe that this was by the witch's power, or was it God's will that Samuel come back up?
It was by God's power. That witch didn't have that kind of power.
Just wanted to clarify.
Are there any more questions? Comments? Rob?
Talking about that appearance, and he said unto her, what form is he of? And she said, an old man come up, and he is covered with a mantle, and Saul perceived it was Samuel. And he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed.
See it. Really, you know, I don't want to open up another 45 minutes of questions or anything, but I've always thought our spirit's going to look much like we are, the spiritual body that we have, and it will be recognizable.
Anyone else? Anyone like
a
closing statement?
Yeah, I do. You know, a lot of people have written about this. There was so much information on that. And I had timed my reading, and I must have read slower here because I didn't get all the way through. But various people have taken a look at Saul, and they have decided that one man decided that he was just a tragic hero, and that God and Samuel didn't want to give up their authority, and Saul was just made kind of a plaything in their hands. That's the way some people looked at it. But that's not really correct. Another man decided that Saul was much like a sacrificial lamb that had to be offered to God voluntarily, and that this would appease God for the sin of Israel. Because you remember that Israel confessed that they had sinned when Samuel anointed Saul publicly there as king and asking for a king. And so a sacrifice had to be offered for sins committed. And particular author believed that Saul was that sacrificial being and that he voluntarily gave himself as a sacrifice when he fell on his own sword and killed himself. There's a lot of theories about that. It's pretty interesting. But Saul found out the truth of statements that were made later on by Solomon in Proverbs 27, verse 24, "For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations." Now, I personally believe that Saul could have made a good king had he trusted in God, had he followed his directions and worked with Samuel the prophet. It seems that even when he became king, he was still acting under the spirit of age that preceded the monarchy, namely that every man did that which was right in his own sight. And I think that's one of the things that church members have to guard against today, because we're living in an age where it's characterized by people wanting to do their own thing, as they call it. That's the same thing they were doing back there in Israel when they had no government. And a lot of people are trying to do that in the church today. And just as it brought destruction to Saul and to the Israelites, it'll bring destruction today.